big as a damn mountain. Hello and welcome to episode 170 of Ribbon of Memes, a podcast where we interrogate films previously described by other people with mental health issues as masterpieces. I am Nick, the tyrannical ward nurse of this podcast, and I'm joined as ever by Roger.
Grunt.
You can talk. And we are back in the American New Wave, I guess we would call it. Mm-hmm. This is one of those films, isn't it? We are in 1975, and we are flying over the cuckoo's nest with Milos Forman's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which is, I think it comes from an American poem or nursery rhyme, One Flew East and One Flew West and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. But it is an examination of a mental health institution in... It's set in the 50s, is it, I think?
Ish. The novel came out in 62.
Okay.
So they immediately announced the film and play adaptations. Okay, so there's history here. Kirk Douglas, who we've talked about before, at this point is essentially running his own production company. And he wanted to play the lead. But he basically couldn't find anybody willing to make the film. The book was considered, you know, troubling enough, hard enough, whatever. And eventually, he met Milos Forman in Prague and said, "Would you be interested?" And said, "Yes." But then the invasion happened.
Fair enough.
Forman later fled to the USA. Stuck in a hotel room for months, trying to process it all, basically. And Michael Douglas and Saul Zaitz sent him a copy of the novel saying, "Would you be interested in this?" He apparently didn't realise that it was the one that he'd been hired to direct before, but he thought it was great. And it's not entirely clear that... Basically, Kirk Douglas still wanted to play the lead, but it was now 10 years later.
And okay, so he was too old at this point to play R.P. McMurphy.
Well, somebody felt that he was too old. It's not entirely clear exactly who. It may have been Forman, it may have been other people, and they recast him. And basically, Kirk and his son Michael fell out for many years, but even though Michael claimed that, it had nothing to do with me, mate. But, yeah.
So we have at this point Jack Nicholson.
Hmm. Yeah, other people who were considered and turned it down. Gene Hackman, James Caan, Marlon Brando, Burt Reynolds.
Marlon Brando, that would have been a disaster, wouldn't it? So, I mean, so
it
Jack Nicholson.
A very different film with Burt Reynolds.
It would. I might have enjoyed it more. Cannonball Cuckoo's Nest. I mean, Jack Nicholson at this point had been in Easy Rider and The Last Detail, I believe, and was quite established amongst the American New Wave directors.
Yeah, and the year before this came out, Chinatown.
Of course, which we have previously talked about. So this is the era of the American New Wave. I've been reading Easy Riders, Raging Bulls, which is about the American New Wave, basically the American cinema in the very late 60s and through the 70s. So I was interested in sort of the thoughts behind it and the attitude. I was a bit surprised to find what the book is, and it's very highly regarded. It's just a ton of gossip about all these directors and people, all of which, almost without exception, seem to have been absolute arseholes. I mean, the ones who weren't, I think, were George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. I mean, the stuff about William Friedkin, they're just all obsessed with sex, and it's just... unpleasant stuff. So I was quite... It wasn't quite the highbrow read I was expecting. It's just these films just got thrown together. And it's made me feel less positively about the American New Wave anyway. And it's sort of relieved when things like Star Wars came along. But this is the era of cinema about which we've discussed before, where the directors briefly sort of had control and almost auteurs took over Hollywood for a little while. Which consequently meant the films were, they didn't have a traditional narrative. They often had anti-heroes. They were as far away from the motion picture code, the Hays Code, as it was possible. I mean, I think it was dead by 1973, but it had been dying for some time
before
then.
There was also that whole thing with the helicopter accident, wasn't there?
So. Oh, what, the Twilight Zone?
Yeah.
Episode. I think that was after this. I could be wrong.
But it was certainly one of the things that studios saying, no, we really want to have more control over this. We can't just let the director say, oh, my mate runs a helicopter business or...
Yes, exactly. So that was, that was one of the things that finished it off. But here we're right in the midst of, these films don't have to have a happy ending. They don't have to have, moral characters. In fact, it's almost a badge of honour that they have a pretty miserable ending for the most part. And so this is where One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. This is the sort of environment it was produced in.
And also, like many of these films, I suspect you've been reading as well, not a happy shoot, even slightly.
Well, it was actually set in a mental hospital in Massachusetts, I think. And it was pretty... Nobody wanted to do it.
Various people weren't talking to various other people, including, at least at one point, Foreman and Nicholson, refused to address each other directly. So...
They got to the point, they were all so depressed, again, this is from the gossip from the film, they were all so depressed and also used to going down into the local city, it may have been Boston, I may be wrong, to get all their drugs off the streets and getting into trouble, that eventually the production just sent someone to buy all the drugs and then distribute them amongst the actors because it was less dangerous than them getting them themselves. But it was a pretty miserable shoot because what we see in the film is kind of the environment they're in. And the film is in this very, austere, Spartan, authoritarian building. There's cages everywhere. Everything's white and polished and stainless steel and scrubbed down. And there's very little nature and humanism or colour in this place. Everything's white and sterile.
Yeah, also, a bit of a side note. I'm not in general a big believer in the whole influence of the environment thing unless people are already damaged, but sometimes they are, as in this case. There was a mental hospital in Boston where three separate people on separate occasions, none of whom knew about the other, decided that the chapel was the perfect place to ignite themselves.
That does suggest something about...
It was not a chapel, you know?
Yeah, it didn't say, don't burn yourself in this chapel. Maybe they did after the first one. Maybe that gave me the idea. So this is the story of R.P. McMurphy, who is... has been arrested. He's a petty criminal. We get the idea. He has now... finally been put away for some time for statutory rape.
Yes, and this is the first scene of the film, and I thought this does not get me feeling, oh, I like this guy, I want him to succeed.
It's a trick, because it's New Wave, you know, he's not... It wouldn't be fashionable for him to show any regret or remorse or anything like that. And I know statutory rape, you know, it's not the same as, you know, what we're talking about here is... underage sex there is not necessarily a consent issue, it's just underage sex, statutory rape. But it's still...
But there's also, and I don't know how old the character is meant to be in the book, but Nicholson, when this is being filmed, is about 37. And
exactly.
You
know,
maybe you shouldn't be screwing teenagers, even if you do think they're legal.
Well, I think the point is that you're not allowed, you're not able to give consent if you're underage. So
yes.
But he's like, oh, I thought she was 19. Yeah, still pretty unpleasant. So it doesn't...
You, sir, are a sleazebag.
Exactly. So from the first scene, this character that, again, I know you're not necessarily supposed to sympathise with, but he's the character that's going to take us through the movie. He's this kind of unapologetic sleazebag.
He is the guy who is supposed to be the most normal of the people who meet here, because the rest are either working for the institution or patients of the institution.
Yes, and I don't know. So he doesn't win over our sympathy. Maybe we're prudish, but you have to sort of put it aside and go along with the film. You know, things can happen, but he doesn't see... You get the impression he's got caught this time. This is not the first, you know. In fact, it's already implied that, you know, he's screwed around a lot.
But also he's been being a troublemaker in regular prison and... It's not entirely clear whether he was actually saying he thought he was mad, though he doesn't say it by the time he gets here.
The implication, and again, I don't think it's spelled out, is that he has basically pretended to be mad because he thinks it'll be much easier serving out his time in a mental institution than in prison as a sex offender, presumably. What he doesn't realise is that once he's in the mental institution, he's there until they say he can go. He doesn't have a sentence particularly anymore. And that becomes, that comes clear later on. So I think his reaction to that news probably, again, suggests that he did it deliberately to just have an easier time.
That was the impression I got, certainly, yeah.
Speaking of the statutory rape at the beginning, it does, one of my issues with the film is, it may seem to be sort of a highbrow exploration of like the human psyche. Certainly got a funny attitude towards women. I mean, women in this film are treated as objects or bitches, basically. I mean, there's no character to them at all. And I struggle. We'll talk about Nurse Ratched later.
A lot of American New Wave strikes me as being very male.
Yes,
in its thinking.
It feels like quite a misogynistic film, or it's certainly from a male point of view. And so these are like, they're either like boys to be chastened by the maternal mum, or they're, you know, teenage boys to conquer whatever girl they can. So I have an issue, maybe we'll come on to it later, but I do have a significant issue with the way women are treated in this film. So McMurphy meets the other inmates, and again, this is quite a cast list, probably because this film made a lot of the careers of these people. We have Danny DeVito in it, as the inmates. Christopher Lloyd in, I think, his first film.
Yes.
Role.
Brad Dourif also.
Brad Dourif, yes, who would go on to become much more famous later on. Scatman Crothers as the night watchman, the night orderly, whatever he is, and Louise Fletcher as Nurse Ratched, among with the, you know, other characters that the names are less recognisable, but you probably recognise their faces because they went on to do a lot of other things.
I think it's noticeable that these are early career actors for the most part.
Yes,
partly as you say, but also this was a film that was potentially controversial. And so people who were a bit more established were rather more reluctant to come in on it. So you get these people to whom a thing that I've seen before is, you know, this film is clearly your big break. It's way bigger. It's going to get more noticed than anything else you've been in. You give it your all and then you build a career out of it. And several of these actors did.
Yeah. I mean, they are a member. So we have this group of mental patients, and we find out their various flaws and tics and problems, and then really the film is an exploration of how these people are treated, how they're institutionalized, basically it's sort of a comment on the inhumanity of these institutions, which I am not, you know, they are, some of these places are bleak and horrific. And you can get trapped in the system very easily.
But that's certainly a big part of the point of Kesey's novel. And of course, in part as a response to that novel, it was already shifting by the time the film came out.
Which is why I think the film is more of a period piece, as you say, because if they'd said it in the 70s, it would have been a very different... Or a lot of the institutes would have been...
I am not saying things have been fixed, but...
Yes. But this is a film about institutions in the 50s and 60s, really. We follow McMurphy, who is this...
He's here to have fun.
He is. And he does it. He's the classic American New Wave kind of anti-hero, particularly anti-authoritarian. And authority, completely expressed in the character of Nurse Ratched, Louise Fletcher.
I would like to talk about Louise Fletcher a bit here.
Yes.
Because, well, for a start, she was going to be in a supporting role in this, probably one of the nurses. The original casting was Lily Tomlin, who could have done it, I think.
Right, yes.
But Foreman saw Fletcher in Thieves Like Us a few years earlier. And, decided I want that performance as my lead. So, Louis Fletcher actually died since we started this podcast. She started dying in 22. She grew up in Alabama, and she talked quite extensively about her experience with the whole paternalistic thing. You know, I'm going to do something you don't like because it's for your own good approach. She talked about it in the context of being white in a area with a lot of black folks, but I cannot help notice that her father's job was founding churches for the deaf.
Right.
Because obviously they couldn't found their own.
He wasn't deaf himself.
He was not deaf himself.
Right.
Anyway, she got her start in Westerns, but she was too tall for most other genres.
Okay, but here she works as this kind of towering figure of imposition.
And, yeah, the character is... I think it's a script. It's trying to do two things. Certainly she is the big villain, and she is a monster in the thing we particularly see. She is controlling through, not through being the big bully, but through saying, oh, what would your parents think of that horrible thing you just did?
Yeah, she's more manipulative
than the bully. Works very well for her as a character, but she is the only authoritarian figure we have any exposure to in the film, and that there is the director, but he's out of things.
Yeah, we have the some of the doctors now, but they it's really all expressed through Nurse Ratched.
So if you were having a serious this is how terrible it is in mental hospitals story, you would also have the casual abuse by orderlies and indeed some more senior staff. And that's just not here, you know. Nobody is worried about being beaten up or raped in their cell overnight.
I agree. I feel like I feel like she is set up to be this huge villain, but really the film, despite the film being about the treatment of mental patients in these institutions, I agree. If that was really what it was about, then yeah, we would see all these casual cruelties and the many different ways that people are trapped. And in some ways, you know, we get the banality of evil. You know, a lot of these people are not doing this deliberately. They're just caught in the system the same as you. Instead, I think the film is much more interested in being anti-authoritarian and anti-establishment. And so it sets up Ratched as this establishment figure. I'll be honest, I had a lot of sympathy. I mean, she is largely alone, or it feels she's set up as to be, in a way, this lone figure, and she's got to control these men somehow. You know, she's in charge of them. And she did that in a way that she could. I had a lot of sympathy with her character in a lot. There are ways when, there are parts in the script where she is absolutely explicitly kind of evil, but I, you know, a lot of the time, and I think maybe it's Louise Fletcher's performance, she does bring some, I don't know, some humanity to it. I didn't feel that she was, I feel like she's set up to be the villain. I ended up having more sympathy with her than I expected. I know she has some significant issues, but I don't know, I feel like the film is like, oh, we should be on the side of these fun boys who just want to do whatever they want. And they are, in many ways, played like children. And she's just... I just put myself in her position of how is she supposed to cope with this? You know, she's clearly not well-staffed and well-equipped. Physically, she's no match for any of them.
She may not particularly have a vocation for it, but she does want a quiet life.
Yeah, so, again, she's just sort of coping with it.
Yeah, and this is where it maps over for me into... As I understand, a lot of the point of the novel is the system grinds you down. But the only way that McMurphy can see, that I assume Kesey conceives of, to avoid being ground down, is to obstruct every single little thing.
Yes.
And, you know, the system knows how to deal with people who obstruct every single little thing. It grinds them up and spits them out. That's why it's big. It's the system. It can do that. And McMurphy just never thinks it. He thinks he is the hero. he cannot see that this is going to happen to him.
Well, that's the point of the film. The whole film is watching this sort of slow car crash, the moments of joy that he brings into their lives, realizing that, you know, that is going to be cut down.
Mm.
And I think it is very effective at that. It does well in getting you in to root for these characters sometimes. I mean, maybe I'm more established with that. I can see the need for some of it. On the other hand, I can see the need, his mental need to rebel against it. And that's what keeps him going. And on that level, I think the story works for me. That's what he's got to do. Nurse Ratched's got to do what she's got to do. They're going to end up clashing, and frankly, Nurse Ratched's going to win because she's on the side of the establishment, which is indeed the way
she has the drugs.
Yes. So on that level, I do think that works for me. And I think, you know, we haven't talked about Jack Nicholson's performance. I genuinely think it's great. You know, it is a good performance. It's in much, you know, my go-to annoying performance mental illness is Brad Pitt in 12 Monkeys. It's just this very performative thing. Jack Nicholson, I don't know, is a bully. Given that we know the kind of character he is and whether or not we're sympathetic to him, you understand why he's being that way. And I think he portrays it very well. His frustrations and his little moments of victory and how I think that's done well. In fact, I think the acting in this film is stellar, really, by including Louise Fletcher, Jack Nicholson, Danny DeVito, all the characters. I think it's really well played. How realistic is it? It's hard to know, but it has a realism to it that feels true. So I did enjoy watching the characters. It has got this sense of, because we know the sort of film it is, it's got this sense of impending tragedy to it. You know, when they're having a great fun, they've escaped and they go on the boat and they have a fishing trip. You know that's a fun scene. You know they're going to pay for that afterwards in some way. So there's a tension running through it. I responded to all that. I did enjoy it. As an examination, as it purports to be, of mental health. Take electroshock therapy, for instance. I mean, that scene where he has electroshock therapy is basically demonized the procedure. Now, the idea is, with that procedure, that you induce a seizure, and in some way producing a seizure helps to reduce symptoms of depression and anxiety. And they used to do it chemically, and that was incredibly unpleasant, and it was very hard to stop the seizures, and it went wrong frequently. So the idea of electroshock therapy was actually a humane technique to induce seizures in a less unpleasant way.
Well, similar to the electric chair was a quicker and less painful method of execution.
Well, that was the, yeah, exactly. So yes, these things are, I mean, again, they can go wrong, but electroshock therapy here is portrayed as a sort of torture.
And I'm sure there were people who used it as torture.
There were, but it was actually quite effective, and it is having a bit of a resurgence now. I just feel there is a gap between the realism that it feels very real, but what it's portraying, I don't know. I felt like there was an agenda, and it was this new wave agenda of anti-establishmentism. And that to me got in the way of an actual examination of what it was actually like in a mental institution in the 50s and 60s. Because it looks so much like that is what it was like. They were horrific places, but as you say, it wasn't just one person being shitty to you. It was the whole milieu of the place, the whole setting, and I don't know. Maybe I just wanted something a bit more documentary style.
Yeah, but of course, as we've talked about before, when you make the authentic documentary, it doesn't get people irks and shouting and changing things, so...
Yes, I felt that it was manipulative in the same way that we were supposed to judge Nurse Ratched for being manipulative while we were being manipulated. Maybe I'm overdoing that.
Well, again, I have a nasty feeling I might actually have to read the book. The impression I'm getting is she is coming into this as a absolutely negative character, but some combination of script, direction and acting gives her these sympathetic moments as well, you know. She is a human who is doing these horrible things, which in its way is much more scary than, oh, you know, I just hate everybody and I will do you in because I can.
That was the terrifying thing about, you know, the Nazis. You know, they were just people. They weren't anything special. They were people like we are people. And that, yeah, and so that is a more terrifying view of it. I wonder if she was, it'd be interesting to read the book, because I wonder if there are other antagonists in the book and they conflated them all into Nurse Ratched. That'd be interesting to see.
Something that did strike me is another of McMurphy's Fed is he treats these guys as basically fellow sleazebags, the sort of person he hangs around with all the time. He has not noticed, he does not realise that, you know, these are people with actual problems. So, you know, he just assumes, obviously, they will back me up against the man because that's what people I know do. He sees at the card game that they're not reliable, but he doesn't take it on board. And so, you know, he tries to take control of the therapy group and get everybody going, yeah, along with him. And it comes apart in argument.
Yes, you're right. But because he's quite egotistical, he doesn't see actually that, yeah, they genuinely have other issues.
He tries to have the party with the hookers and it gets out of hand because, you know, these are not people who are up to doing that sort of thing.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. That's an interesting take on it. Again, he's kind of thoughtless and selfish. They're interestingly well-drawn characters.
I just didn't like him.
Well, the only one, the most sympathetic one, I guess, is the chief, isn't it? Will Sampson, who we discover later on, is not mute. He finds it easier to be mute. And he becomes the sort of emotional heart at the end of the film when McMurphy, after one step too far, after the hookers have gone out of control and huge spoilers ahead, attempts to kill Nurse Ratched, and is lobotomized for his efforts. And again, lobotomy is I'll defend electroshock therapy. I will not in any way defend lobotomization, which is a pretty horrific procedure. But the chief then realizes McMurphy that he knew is gone, kills the empty shell of him in a way, and escapes. He is a sort of sympathetic character, and it is quite an emotional
moment. I believe he's actually the viewpoint character of the book.
Yes, I think he is. You're right. Though he only really sort of comes in as a character a little way into the film, or probably about halfway in. It's one of those New Wave films that I kind of, yes, it feels worthy and I should watch it. But it's a hard watch and I don't think it's a particularly illuminating watch. On the level of, McMurphy versus the establishment, it works and I enjoyed it. But it was hampered by the fact I didn't particularly like R.P. McMurphy. And I had some sympathy with Nurse Ratched. As far as spending time in that place, it's not a very, as all the actors found, it's not a very pleasant place to be. I enjoy it? There were bits of it I enjoyed. I disagreed with the kind of preaching of it. I was disturbed by its attitude towards women, and a little annoyed with it in places.
I'm afraid I found the whole thing a fairly unpleasant experience.
Yeah, fair enough.
But fair I noticed enough. That many people disagree with this. This was the second film to win all five of the big Academy Awards, picture, actor, actress, director and screenplay.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like very much Oscars territory, doesn't it, in that it's kind of slightly unpleasant, kind of middle brow. I mean, by that, it's kind
of 70s sort of, Oscars territory anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of, it feels worthy, and is unpleasant and has a sad ending. And that, yeah, that's very much, I can understand why it won all. I mean, it's very well done. We were recently talking about the Dr. Fibes film. And, you know, this is a whole nother level of sort of professionalism and filmmaking.
I'd just like to mention the other two films to have got that particular set of awards. It Happened One Night, so 1934 screwball comedy.
I was thinking of A Night to Remember about the Titanic. Yes.
Clark Gable, Claudette Colbert, Frank Capra directing.
I'd like to. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah.
I would like.
And the other is The Silence of the Lambs. So.
You know, Silence of the Lambs is a very similar one in that it kind of feels real, but is is deeply cinematic, and he's not got a lot of to do with realism.
It is one of my ongoing obsessions that the idea of the sexual murderer, who is can also portray totally articulate a normal person. They just don't happen.
This is why I dislike Dexter and Seven, and I just that is not again. I should just take my brain out and enjoy it. But yes, that's not serial killers are kind of, it's a significant mental illness and they often functional, but it's pretty unpleasant, sordid and doesn't usually have a master plan. You're not usually Machiavelli with these things.
They do anyway, because they have to.
Yeah, they have a compulsion. Well, again, you've studied the psychology relatively closely, and it's not
it's for the game,
much
honestly.
About what's mirrored on the. It's not much about what's mirrored on the films, is it? But that's because no one would actually want to watch that sort of thing.
Yeah,
anyway, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Is it a masterpiece? I feel it's a bit disingenuous. I think it is masterfully done. It's incredibly well acted, I thought. With all of that, I don't think there's really a weak link in it. It is one of those films, yeah, I didn't desperately enjoy spending time with these people.
I was quite pleased when it finished. Kicks it over for me. I do not ever want to watch this again.
Yeah, yeah.
I may change my mind, but I can't see it from here.
I mean, there are films where, you know, we felt something like The Pianist, you know, that's a pretty hard watch, but it felt...
I could see watching that again.
Yeah, I could actually, yeah, you're right, maybe
right
that's...
Now,
in
but...
But it's not that we're against films that are downbeat and depressing, but yeah, I agree. It also, to me, it felt a bit manipulative, but maybe I'm wrong there. I don't know a lot about the truth, but I do know a little. It's one of those things where you know a little about some of it, it makes you doubt the rest of it. But there we go.
Yeah. But at least we're very glad we were not involved in the filming of it. Nobody
yes.
seems to have had a good time there.
Nobody seems to have enjoyed it, and the frog died.
Well, possibly not the guy who went over to Boston to buy the drugs, but, you know.
Well, there we are. Thanks, Milos. We'll let you know. I'm not in the mood for more American New Wave for a little while, but maybe we'll do some at some point. But that's enough for me again for another few episodes.
Well, I'll see how we go.
All right, Chief. Nice knowing you.